How would you like to be able to create a property portfolio with wholesale deals? Frank Iglesias will tell us how. He is a real estate investor and builder doing business in multiple states, and he has done hundreds of deals spanning a variety of strategies in wholesale deals, fix and flips, rentals, and new construction. So, Frank, please tell us, how can entrepreneurs create a property portfolio with wholesale deals?
Property Wealth Strategies Podcast with Lily Patrashko shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for having me on, Lily. It's an interesting thing about creating property portfolios with, depending on what types of properties you want to buy, whether it's single family, multifamily, commercial, residential, there's all sorts of ways to create a portfolio. One of the easiest ways is by leveraging a technique called wholesaling, because what wholesaling does is it puts you on the forefront of how to buy a property. Typically, when people that are called wholesalers go out there, they go find properties and then they flip them for a quick profit to investors that are going to hold them, whether they're going to rent them, flip them, whatever. But you can use the exact same strategy to build your own portfolio, because at the end of the day, it's all, when you're a wholesaler, all you're doing is acquiring. The goal is to acquire, and then you get to decide how you get rid of the property, whether you sell it or don't get rid of it, you keep it, whether it's for a rental or whatever the case may be. This allows you to really pick the properties you actually want. You know, there's a phrase called cherry picking. Sell all the ones that are pretty good to other investors, but keep the best ones for yourself. You know, it's a common thing you'll hear. And, you know, and that sounds almost self-serving, but not really, because everyone has different goals, right? So I might cherry pick properties different from the next person, from the next person. And there's so much variety out there, there's no shortage of property to go around. So it really allows you to really pick and choose what you want to keep to build up your own portfolio.
Thank you. What's the best way to find wholesale deals? Does it involve any praying? Because, I mean, your name is Frank Iglesias, which means churches in Spanish. Anything to do with praying, or you need an actual strategy or doing it more effectively?
Well, I think no matter what your faith is, if you pray, that's always an asset. So there's, you know, and when you're dealing with people, which real estate is ultimately a people business, prayer is always a good thing, right? It's just so that's a given, no doubt. Do that regardless of what your faith is. Now, as far as strategy, yeah, there's a number of strategies. So when you are a wholesaler, it's almost like a sales and marketing business, because a lot of these people, when they wholesale, again, they take the property, they get a contract, they go find another investor, sell it to them real quick. They might not even take ownership of it. They just do an assignment and they make a profit. But once you hold the property and now it's yours, now it's not really sales and marketing anymore, it's investing. And so that's an important distinction to keep in mind. So the strategy you're really looking for comes down to what kind of marketing techniques you want to use, but also what kind of properties do you want to hold in your portfolio? Because some techniques work a little better than others in certain markets. Some techniques work better than others, maybe for specific properties. And so it's the old adage, you start with the end in mind. What are you looking to have in your portfolio? And you reverse engineer back to what kind of strategies in marketing may help you find those properties. Now, you could do the spray and pray approach, right? Just do a technique and just see what happens. And certainly that can work. And it does work for some people, some better than others. But if you can target it, you increase your chance of success.
Thank you. So what's the best method that you have used in order to find wholesale deals?
You know, one of my favorites is, it doesn't cost any money, but it costs time, and that's networking. You meet as many people as you can, and you make sure you get on their list, sure, but even better is actually pick up the phone, and it's very old school. and I have gray hair, so I'm not the youngest chicken. But the reality is the phone never goes out of style. It just doesn't, right? When you get wholesalers on the phone that bring you deals, so instead of you doing the marketing, you leverage other people doing the wholesalers. Well, if you go out and you meet, try to meet every wholesaler out there, you're going to find a few things. You're going to find people that are new, and sometimes those can be great relationships. You're going to find people that are experienced. Sometimes those can be great relationships. Some wholesalers may not be looking for what you're looking for your portfolio. So those may not be the best ones to cultivate. It's kind of like nice to know you, but you know, you're not going to put a lot of energy there because they're looking for something different than what you want. But as you build these relationships, they're doing the marketing for you, right? They're on the, you know, they've got the boots on the ground. They're doing the hustling. And that allows you as a buyer to just pick and choose the deals. Now you're going to pay a little bit more, right? Because they're going to make their fee when they sell it to you. But it saves you a lot of time and effort. So I tell people, if you want to be the wholesaler and find the deals, and you can do it, but you have to have a hustler mentality, because that really is what, I mean, again, it's a sales and marketing business. Whereas if you want to sit back and let others do all the marketing and finding, and let's be real, a lot of real estate investors do not like marketing. They just don't, right? They'd rather go to their realtor or have someone bring them a deal. You know, we're not going to call it the easy button, but definitely easier. You know, then networking is an extraordinarily powerful strategy. And the beautiful thing about networking is you're building relationships with people that can be repeat business over and over again over time. It's very fascinating. When people see that you're in the business for a while, in particular, they're naturally more open to doing business with you because you're not a new face. You didn't just show up yesterday on, you know, Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, Facebook. They're like, oh, this, I've seen this name a bunch. So, you know, it just gives you a bit of legitimacy that only can be earned through time.
Thank you. What's the best way to go from chaser of wholesaling opportunities to attractor of wholesale property opportunities?
So if you want to be selling, so effectively you're saying, how do I attract deals coming to me without doing any chasing? Yeah, it gets back to this idea of just putting yourself, first of all, you put yourself out there. And nowadays, everyone's all over social media, right? So if you're beyond all the channels, you can't necessarily be, you know, 100% in on every social media platform because that's very time consuming to do it well. But pick a platform. Facebook, quite frankly, is very good for real estate investing. And just be active in the groups. Have a profile that states what you do. And interact with people. Go in these network groups. Interact with the people putting up deals on these platforms. Even if you're not interested in the deal, it might be in an area you're interested in. I would interact with that person. And what happens is you interact with enough people and you tell enough people what you're doing, people will start sending you deals. In particular, the newer wholesalers, people that maybe have 2 years or less of experience, just as a loose average, because when you don't have a ton of experience, you're looking for the people that want to buy and build portfolios. You know, you're looking for those people doing what you want to do if your goal is to build a portfolio. And so those make for really good opportunities. And if you're experienced as an investor, one of the things you can also do, you know, you can be a value add to these wholesalers. Anytime you can provide value is good, right? It just builds that bond. It builds a relationship. I always tell people, whenever you meet someone, try to add value first. If at all possible, try to add value first. You know, be the giver, not the taker. It goes a long way.
Thank you. How do I find motivated sellers who will sell at a deep discount? Is it that you need to start doing collaborations with divorce lawyers, insurance agents, and other similar type entrepreneurs that may already have your ideal target market?
Yeah, no, good question. So those methods you mentioned can work. The thing is with things like, and you'll have like divorce attorneys, probate attorneys, closing firms, it's very, very hit and miss, right? Because you don't know what their caseload is going to be, right? And so, and the reality, unless it's a really big firm, they generally don't have a ton going. But when they do get one, it could be really good. So there's absolutely value in doing those things. Typically, what we find is people will go after people that have known distress buckets. Common one, of course, is foreclosure. You know, people that are in a foreclosure proceeding, that's a very common one. People that are delinquent in taxes, that's a common one. If you're in a more urban area, code enforcement is something that comes up. People that have highly dilapidated properties, maybe they need to be torn down, or they're just in really bad shape, they could be condemned. And interestingly enough, one of the ways that actually, again, old school, but still has a high probability of success, it's called driving for dollars. Get in your car and just go find them. And when you drive around and you see properties in a poor state, by default, those properties tend to have people that are more motivated to sell. So there's a number, you know, those are some of the more common ways. Now, could you go buy lists of people that have properties that meet your criteria, that have a higher risk of motivation? You can, and that'll certainly work. And then you have to skip trace them, pick up the phone, or have an assistant pick up the phone and start cold calling them. There's still people that do direct mail. They still mail postcards and mail letters. All the techniques work to find these motivated sellers. The key is, which one can you execute consistently? Because at the end of the day, when you're looking for sellers, regardless of the technique, you know, sales figures tell us you have to touch somebody 5 times before you get a sale, minimum. And I think the chart usually says 80% of business happens after the 5th touch, between 5 and 16. The problem is most investors quit after 1, 2, or 3. Oh, you know, I call them 3 times, I'm done. Right, or I send them 3 postcards. You got to get to 5 to get to that, you know, the bulk of the success starts. And the reality is far too many investors quit before they ever get there. So you've got to be persistent, whichever method you use.
Thank you. How much would an entrepreneur need to start? And can someone start without money?
Yeah, well, it depends. If you want to be a wholesaler, you don't need any money. But money makes it a lot easier. So can it be done with that? Think of it like a scale. The less money you have, the more effort you need to put in. Now, that doesn't mean if you have money, there's no effort. There's still a lot of effort. So it's, we're really just talking degrees of a lot of effort. So, but yeah, no, I mean, again, if you have nothing, then right, you basically, all you have is effort. You know, that's when you get in the car, start driving around, knocking on doors, you know, it's all sweat equity at that point. Right. And it can work. Okay. It can work. And some people, by the way, love that type of thing. And that's all they really want to do anyway. Okay. That's some people's personalities. Awesome. And do it. If you have money, then what you want to do is you start paying for marketing. And actually, let me back up. If you don't have money, you can also network, which of course costs nothing other than time. Right. But again, I fully believe networking is one of the most powerful things you can do. And it costs nothing but time. Okay. Now, yes, time is money. So, you know, you want to be strategic about it, but it's, you know, it's unlimited potential there, especially as connected as we are today. But if you're going to spend money, now you're getting into, you know, you want to have some strategy. A lot of investors will, okay, we got money. Let's go spend money on marketing. Great. Awesome. And then it doesn't work because it was more of a spray and pray tactic, which again, it can work. But the thing is, work with a coach, and if you can't afford to pay for a full-time coach, just pay for a session, right? To build a marketing strategy so that when you go spend money on marketing for the first time, you have a strategy to get to 5 touches and make those dollars count. Far too many times investors market without strategy and then the money's gone and I don't have a deal and uh-oh, now we have a problem.
Thank you. Should someone focus on distressed properties pre foreclosures or off-market deals?
So a pre-foreclosure property could be on market or it could be off market, both ways. What I would say is a lot of investors like to focus on off market. And the reason they like off market is because there's less competition. You know, it's not out there for the world to see. That is true. Now, I will say that doesn't mean there's deals that are not on the market. There absolutely are. And on the flip side, you can find off-market deals that are every bit as challenging and not a deal as on-market. So what's the differentiator then, right? If you have good and bad deals on or off-market, and whether they're pre-foreclosure, maybe they're not, what's the differentiator? And what I tell people is it's all about negotiating. The odds that you're going to find a great deal are generally very low. I would say if you look at 100, you maybe will find one. It's a very low number. However, if you look at 100, what you'll probably find is approximately 25 opportunities. And depending on how well you negotiate, you can create maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 deals out of that. So if you look for good deals, you're probably going to be very disappointed because you're not going to find many. But you'll find plenty of opportunity, and your ability to negotiate, solve sellers' problems is what creates the deals. And that's really where the focus is how do you solve a seller's problem and create a deal? That's where it is.
Thank you. What's the best way to negotiate creatively to solve the seller's problem?
Well, when you say creatively, are you referring to creative financing or just creatively solving their problem?
Creatively solving their problem. Like, what kind of things could you offer them that would entice them?
Well, a lot of it starts with just figuring out what is their issue. The standard answer that you'll get 90%+ of the time is, I need X number of dollars and that's it. Now, I like the way Tony Robbins said this once many years ago. I heard him saying, nobody wakes up saying, I want to sleep with a bunch of green pieces of paper with a face on them, right? Right. So it's extremely rare that it's about the money. It's about what's behind the need. And the reality is we have to get to the bottom of that, have that conversation with a seller. And it doesn't usually happen in 60 seconds. It could, again, every once in a blue moon, you'll get that person that will be like, I'll tell you everything. But usually it's going to take a bit more effort than that. And you know, that gets into negotiation, rapport. And once you understand what it is they really need, then you can structure something that actually solves their problem. Now, in some cases, yeah, they really do need the full amount of money right then and there. Okay, certainly that is true. But a lot of times they only need a subset of it. Or maybe they want it, but they don't necessarily need it all today. They just need a piece of it today because maybe they're moving, maybe they're this, you know, who knows. So it really comes down to how many ways, so we're going back to your question about creativity, how many ways do I know how to build rapport? How many ways do I know how to talk to people? And I'll say this, it is really key that you speak to sellers where they're at. Talk to them how they want to be heard. This gets in this whole idea about reading people. My wife told me the other day, she's like, you're like studying everybody. I said, that's what I'm supposed to do. But the idea is, you know, and a lot of people have heard of DISC profiles. Well, it's a very real thing. You have these four general personality types. Some people will just say left, like one of my coaches, like you got left brain, right brain, analytical, emotional, right? That's another way to do it. Whichever way you do it, the key is understand that there's these buckets where people generally lean toward in their personality. And once you identify that, which usually does not take very long at all, you speak to them at that level. So I, for example, am a very analytical person. So if you come at me with this, I'm super emotional, I'm like, oh my gosh, stop, right? But if you start talking to me about, you know, very detailed technical stuff, you'll have my attention because that's what resonates naturally to me. So I don't know that as many ways as you can figure out and learn to negotiate, build rapport. But the key is figure out their personality type ASAP. And again, usually doesn't take more than, I don't know, 30 seconds. This doesn't take long to figure out. And then you adapt your speech to their personality type, because then now we're building rapport. Now we're building rapport.
Thank you.
You feel like a friend. Your friend.
Thank you. What scripts or techniques work best for cold calling or direct mail?
The one that makes you sound natural. And I know that's a generic answer, but let's think of it this way. We've all, at this point, had services with international support. Nothing wrong with the international call centers. They're very nice people. I've met them in person. But we all know when we call that company that has a call center and they're reading scripted answers and we're just like, it doesn't make us feel good. Like, I think we can, most, if not everyone, can relate to that experience. And, you know, I tell, and I've had people cold call people and, you know, use scripts, but I tell them the script is just a guide. The goal is sound like a human being. Like, and I tell people, I'm like, do you have friends? And everyone says, yes, I have friends. And I'm like, well, do you read off a piece of paper when you talk to them? And they're like, no. And I'm like, then that's exactly how you talk to sellers. You know, the script is a guide, and there's a bunch of scripts out there. At the end of the day, and some people will say, well, you know, these questions get at motivation better, or these words, and all of that's fine and good, and it's true. But the thing that tops them all, instead of focusing that much on the script, just be a human being. That will out-resonate everything. Because again, you figure out their personality, you talk to them like a friend. When they feel like you're not threatening, right? You're not there to steal their house or anything. You're genuinely being a friend. All of a sudden, they open up. They open up. And you mentioned direct mail. That's harder to do in direct mail, right? Because there's no speech. So yeah, there's different scripts. I don't know that there's a best one. At the end of the day, they all more or less say the same thing. What I will say is usually with direct mail, what's more effective is giving them a creative type of mailer. So a friend of mine said that this once. They literally sent postcards that looked like they were drafted by a five-year-old. And so the words were written like with crayon colors and like a crayon-like font. So it looks very pleasant, it looks fun, and when people see that, they're more likely to open it. The message really isn't any different, but they see that and they remember that these people that get these postcards, they're usually getting a bunch. So the odds that your language is gonna stick out, it could happen, but pretty low. But if it visually sticks out, that's what people remember. Oh, that was that one with the cute little crayon color. Oh, that was the one that put a quarter in there. It's a quarter, but it doesn't matter. They remember that one had a quarter. How nice, or whatever, right? So it's those touches that make you stand out. That's really what tends to move the needle with direct mail.
Thank you. How do I buy wholesale properties with minimal risk?
Minimal risk. Get a coach. Step one, get a coach. Why? Because you don't know what you don't know. And real estate is a sport. It's a full contact sport, as I like to say. And in every full contact sport we know, or really any sport, contact or not, there are coaches. And what you don't know can and will hurt you. Real estate's a sport where there's lots of zeros on the numbers. And as you get to bigger properties, there's more zeros. And if you get that wrong, it can be really, really expensive. So the way you're going to minimize risk is you need to have a coach walk you through this that's been there, right? They've been to the mountaintop. They've been to the valley. They've seen what looks great. And they've also experienced some pain. So they can relate to both sides of the spectrum. And as a result, they can help you point out, here's the pros, here's the cons, and here's the risks. And the risks have a dollar value assigned. Sometimes it's clear. Sometimes it's can only be estimated. I was telling somebody recently, I said, hey, because they were actually asking me about risk. I said, you know, when you're dealing with risk, you have to be reasonable. Like you can't Otherwise, you fall into analysis paralysis because you don't want to go there. Because if you get there, then nothing's going to happen. But when you have risk, what are my reasonable things that could go wrong? And am I buying the property at a price point that accounts for it? Now, you can't sit there and go, you know what? I didn't account for a meteor falling out of the sky and blowing the city up. That's not realistic. And I say that tongue in cheek, but the reality is I've heard crazy things like that. And you're like, you might not ever buy a property thinking like that. So you have to assess what are the reasonable things that can go wrong. A good coach can help you assess those things. And then you look at what is the property. Okay, what are the pros? What are the cons? What are the things you got to take care of? What's the exit? Are you adding it to your portfolio? Are you just going to flip it to someone else? Are you going to fix it up and sell it? What's the exit? You combine all these factors to determine risk. Now, I will say this, wholesaling, very low risk, extremely low risk. You're going to rent it, a lot, you know, relatively low risk, right? Depending on the property, what it needs, the type of renters you're going to have. It can be relatively low risk. It can be higher risk at times too, though. Depends. Fix and flip, that's going to be higher risk, right? That's the fun thing everyone sees on TV. Look at this. You buy it, you fix it, and you sell it for this, and you go retire at the beach, right? We all seen that ad, but the reality is those are the riskiest ones because there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things can go wrong.
Thank you. Which red flags should I watch out for when evaluating wholesale deals?
Oh, good question. What are the red flags when I'm looking at a wholesale deal? Number one is, does the wholesaler have it under contract? Running away, that's probably the number one. There's a thing called daisy chains where a wholesaler will get a contract and he tells people who then tell people who then tell people. And then you get wind of it and you find out the person you're talking to doesn't actually have the contract with the seller. Extremely frustrating, wastes a ton of people's time every day. Unfortunately, you know, we live in a free world, right? And people are free to do a number of things. And unfortunately, this is something that comes with the territory. So you want to first and foremost verify, is the person you're talking to, is this wholesaler, are they direct to the seller? Do they have the contract? If they tell you it's their partner, be very concerned, okay? It might be a simple partner, but a lot of times that's indicative of a daisy chain. So if they tell you, yes, I'm direct, fantastic, then let's continue that conversation. That's the number one thing, by and large. The number two risk I would tell you is most wholesalers, not all, but the vast majority, have never renovated a property. So when they're telling you how to assess or what a property needs and what it's worth and all, the reality, they've never done it. So you get these figures that can be extraordinarily far-fetched from reality. I don't fault them, they just haven't been trained in it. I mean, I applaud them because they're at least putting forth the effort, right? So, you know, I'm not mad at them. But as a buyer and you want to reduce risk, because you're looking to build a portfolio, right? You really need to know what good looks like and understand how to assess those things. Because if you go off the wholesaler, and by the way, by extension, I'm gonna say wholesaler / realtor, because it's no different with realtors. If you go off just what they give you, you might be really, really disappointed. And sadly, that's something I've seen many times. People by and large have a good heart, right? We all want to do the right thing. But that doesn't mean we can properly assess risk. So I would say those two are the number one things. A, do they have a contract? B, understand how to do your own due diligence. Do it thoroughly. Do not depend on the person bringing you the deal, because that could be a recipe for disaster.
Thank you. How do I structure deals using other people's money?
How do you structure people using other people's money? I tell people this, you want to take the deal to a hard money lender and get their opinion. If they tell you it's not a deal, don't go try to raise private capital for it. It's probably not going to work out too well. Okay. If they tell you it's borderline, it could probably be done, right? If they tell you it's a good deal, if it's a good deal for a hard money lender, it's probably a good deal for you. Now, there is a caveat to what I just said. Lenders that are businesses Their goal is to make money doing what? The same thing banks do. They have capital, they lend it, they make money on interest. That's their goal. It's very simple. A lot of times, lenders will look to make sure deals are financeable, not necessarily good for the end investor. So we have to be careful. So, because a financeable deal doesn't necessarily mean it's a good deal. So you have to take what I said a moment ago and you got to go a little bit deeper. If they tell you it's a good deal, you got to get them to tell you why it's a good deal. Not for them, for you. Okay? Because they can tell you it's a good deal and it is for them. And they'll finance it, but it doesn't mean it'll be good for you. So you got to go a step further, okay, and dive deeper into that. Now, if you want to bring in private capital, which could be family, friends, you know, co-workers, somebody you met at a real estate meeting, whoever it may be, one of the things I've learned to do is if a deal makes sense on paper, okay, this deal makes sense, it's a good deal, take maybe, again, being reasonable, take 10% off the value. Does it still make sense? If it does, that would probably work pretty well for private capital. If it doesn't, might not want to do that. Might not want to do that. Because if you work with private capital and it goes south, now you are dealing with someone else's capital, and that's not very fun if it goes south. It's not a fun place to be. Right. And then it's all solvable. My wife has a sign in our kitchen. Everything is figure outable, which is true. Everything really is figure outable. The question is, how much time is it going to take? How much effort and those sorts of things? But best to just not put yourself in that position. Be patient. If you grow something a little too quick, you can overwhelm yourself. That's something we experience firsthand. Where it looks real good until you realize, oh my gosh, what in the world are we in the middle of, right? So, you know, and I think we've all had that experience, right? Where something went good, hey, let's do it some more. And it kind of, I don't want to say gets away from you, but it kind of does. It's just like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So when you're dealing with private capital, you just have to remember you're dealing with people, you're dealing with their capital. You want to be very respectful of that. And too often what I've seen, again, it's something we learned the hard way. Too often when people talk about raising private capital, they keep it all about let me rephrase that. It's heavily focused on the deals when really it should be heavily focused on the people. And when it's heavily focused on the people, it gives you a different perspective. But when you're growing a business, it's easy to lose sight of that, right? Because when everything's going good, what do we naturally think as humans? That it'll just keep getting better. And that's not how the world works. There's this thing called cycles where things go up, go down, world events come in, things go sideways. So, you know, I started this question or this answer this question by saying, talk to your hard money lender. Take whatever your hard money lender and they just tell you why it's a good deal. And oh, you want to use private capital? Great. Whatever they tell you, be a little more conservative. And that'll probably have a pretty good chance of success at that point.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can find you.
Where can entrepreneurs find me? Easy. I'm on all the social media, the main ones, right? Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, on TikTok occasionally. I'll get on X some, but Facebook's going to be the fastest place to find me. You can go to my website, frankiglesias.com. We're old school. You can call us 678-408-2228. Call us, text us. Those are my favorite, quite honestly. When a wholesaler calls me and we chat, I'll look at their deal. And usually I'll look at it on the spot if I can. If I'm in a place where I can do it, I'll look at a spot. Because now what that tells me is, and I'll say this for everyone, the faster we get on the phone, the better. Because now I'm not electronic communication. I'm a human being. So reach out to me electronically, sure, but man, let's get on that phone.
Thank you.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.